Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Food Network Obsessed. This is the podcast where we dish on all things food with your favorite chefs, food influencers, and Food Network stars. I'm your host, Jamie Sire, and today we have a Food Network personality dishing on his new culinary reality show. But before we get to today's episode, we have a quick, very exciting announcement. Food Network Obsessed is nominated for a Webby Award for Lifestyle Podcast. You can vote for the podcast on Webby's homepage, and voting ends April 18th. Now back to today's episode. He is an actor, host of Carnival Eats, and the all-new Best Bite in Town. It's Noah Kapp. Noah, welcome to Food Network Obsessed. I would say this interview is like 3 years in the making, is it not?
I mean, it's funny that you bring that up right out of the gate, because I checked just before we started and I was like, I messaged you, yeah, almost 3 years ago to say, am I going to be on the podcast or what?
Well, and in dramatic fashion.
Here you are. Now here you are. We are so excited to be talking to you. And I actually wanted to start off with a question that I think Food Network fans will soon be asking. And I'm already selfishly wondering about it. How does one get invited to be in the Bite Club?
Oh, wow. I mean, luckily, we have a rule where we are allowed to talk about Bite Club.
Okay, so, good,
I can answer this question. That would have been awful if we had that old
first rule of Bite Club. Yeah,
that's it. I mean, well, listen, I'm in the Bite Club, so clearly anything is possible. I think it's really Guy's kind of club. He's got an unbelievable skill set to be able to find talent and people and bring them together. And I think what's super fun about this kind of Bite Club concept is that so many of these chefs are going to get an opportunity, are getting an opportunity to explore the country in ways that I think that they don't normally get to. The real kind of like mom and pop, small town, kind of like what people think of with Triple D type of location. So it's cool, even in the short little first run that we've done, to see some of the big personalities in these environments, you know?
Absolutely. Well, the Bite Club and Guy are both key parts of your exciting new show, Best Bite in Town, where Guy Fieri is the executive producer. So can you kind of take us behind the scenes and share what that initial conversation with Guy was like and when he approached you about hosting the show?
Yeah. Well, Jamie, we have to go way back to the beginning.
We need like some music.
This is it. Yeah. This story actually starts with me making a sandwich, which is super fitting.
Love that.
I love carbs and bread is just really kind of my... I'd say I'm 80% dough and 20%. I was making a sandwich and the phone rang and I didn't pick it up. And I ate the sandwich or whatever. And then I picked up voicemail and it was Guy. And at this time, I, like so many people, only knew him through the TV. I only knew him through all of his shows. And like so many people, I had marathoned Triple D. I mean, I had sat on the sofa and logged so many hours. I'd been on the websites researching when I was traveling, what, you know, where to go. And I picked up this voicemail and it was from him. And it was like everything with him. this just super classy, awesome thing where he reached out personally to invite me to Guy's Grocery Games. He was like, I'm here with the team. We were talking. We think you'd be a great judge. And I wanted to personally reach out and invite you. The great thing about not answering that call was I have the voicemail now. So I thought that like a cool little...
Like you're never deleting that, right?
Yeah. I mean, what an awesome little keepsake. But that was the beginning of me meeting him in person. And when I went to do the first episode of Triple G on the lunch break, I went into his trailer and we were having a conversation and he was like, you know, I watch your show, Carnival Eats. And I was like, get out of here. I mean, it's like, I can't imagine you're watching a lot of food television when you're not, you know, like on, let alone me and the Carnival Eats. And we had this awesome conversation. And I think we both saw something in each other. There was a respect for what we do. I had come from being a scripted actor in a lot of ways. So I think I had a comfortableness on camera and he just kind of picked up on it. And we had a blast on Triple G and it kind of just set this relationship off. And over the years, we slowly built a friendship and eventually got to the point where I wanted to talk to him about some ideas that I had. And we had this awesome conversation when I was out filming with him and he basically in his magical way took these rough kind of ideas or whatever and turned it into this awesome concept that is Best Bite in Town and that people are going to get to finally enjoy because from the moment he kind of explained what he was thinking, I still think of myself as a viewer more than a personality on the network. And I was just like, I would watch that. You know, like I could totally see myself watching that.
Well, I am very excited to watch that. And I know we've kind of been giving little teasers throughout these first few minutes of this convo, but give us the overview. Give us the elevator pitch. What is the premise of the show and what sets it apart from other culinary series on television and on the network?
Yeah, at its base, it's, I think, what people have been trying to find a way to do for a long time, which is a little bit of travelogue and a little bit of competition all in one. But really, the easiest way to describe it is the way that Guy describes it. And that is that he doesn't have time to go.
He is a busy guy.
He is a busy guy. And he doesn't have time to go to all the spots that he would love to hit for Triple D. So he's sending me out each week with two celebrity chefs to help find the best bite in town. He takes all the research that he does for Triple D, gives it to us and lets us pick two restaurants each. So we land up getting a chance to show people at home this super cool small town, a handful of unbelievable little hidden gem restaurants. For me, and I know for Guy equally, shine a light on people that have a hard time finding the light, who are tucked away in the nooks and crannies of this country, who have a passion for food, who have a love for what they do, and getting to showcase them. And then each of us has to narrow down the food that we've tried at these different restaurants to one dish that we're going to submit to like a local panel of judges in front of the whole community in a big kind of town square event. And they taste and judge and officially award the best bite in town. And then cue the prizes, money for charity and money for the restaurant and giant trophies.
Fame and adoration. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Bragging rights, which you can't put a price on. And then, of course, a penalty for the losing chefs. But, you know.
Oh, wait. What's the penalty?
I don't want to ruin the penalties, but okay. I was embarrassed in a lot of small towns.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, so are all of the places that you guys feature, are these all handpicked by Guy and all of his research that he does for Triple D? Or are you guys kind of like inserting some of your own little hidden culinary gems as well?
It's Guy. I mean, the each episode kind of starts with this really fun little scene where you get to see him delivering the dossier to me. I'm out living my life. I'm at the dentist. I'm at the movies. And he just keeps kind of appearing with this like secret mission kind of, you know, envelope. Gives me the envelope and sends me out on that week's mission. And we kind of open up the dossier as a group once we're in the bite mobile. And we open it up and we start picking. I will say this, I've dabbled in the world of reality television and the different things that I've done. And I understand that there is a massaging of reality, but this really is the way it is. When you're watching us, we're picking the restaurants. It's like unfolding right there. So it's super cool.
What's the criteria for you and the Bite Club members? Like, what are you guys using to determine what qualifies a dish worthy of nomination?
Yeah, that's the tough part. Like, in that moment, you're trying to think about the town that you're in, about the food, the flavors that kind of get associated with those spots on the map. You're trying to think about the other two, you know, if it's Artie and Joe, you know what I mean? Or whoever it may be, like, what are they thinking? What directions might they go? They've both went this way. Do I want to kind of go this way and roll that dice of having something completely different? A lot goes into it. Also, I'm always driving the van at that time for some reason. So it's like, I got to make decisions while I'm also in control of everybody's life.
Maybe in season two, we can hook you up with like a driver or something.
Yeah, or AI will be at the point where it'll just be driving for me.
Oh, well, there you go. I mean, that's another thing.
That's the dream.
All right, without giving away too much, are there any memorable moments or standout dishes that you can share that the viewers will absolutely not want to miss?
I, as always, think of this show, like I said, as a viewer. And I think the fun of it is it always feels like you're seeing your backyard. It's just, you know, the one a couple streets down. Like, it feels familiar. You know it. There's something about these towns, these cities that we go to and the people that we meet. I think that more than ever right now, there's just a feeling of like, man, we're all in this together. We all have this love and passion for food. We've all got this desire to build our business or to do something for the community or whatever it is. It's just relatable things that I think people at home can watch. Look, I'm coming from a show called Carnival Eats, so I tend to drift towards food that I always think the average viewer at home is kind of like, I would go the double bacon cheeseburger with Noah on this one. You know, I'm still a sucker for pizza and all that kind of like, you know, deep fried goodness. But there's a lot of fun stuff and there's a lot of talent, too. I've learned so much just like hanging around the other chefs and everything. It's awesome.
Do you have a favorite stop from season one?
I thought you were going to say favorite chef. And I was like, oh, I can't
wait. I would not do that to you. Yeah,
it's just like I've been dying to call names out. But equally embarrassed or equally uncomfortable, do I have a favorite town? Well, I mean, I don't want to reveal too much of where we went, but I will say this. We really kind of worked our way across the country. You know, in hindsight, was it the greatest idea for Guy to send us out to Alabama, Arkansas in July? I don't know. You know what I mean? My skin will tell us in years from now. But yeah, we covered a lot of ground. We saw a lot of cool spots. And man, there was food in places that you associate with something that were just so unexpected. In places where it's like you think it's all about barbecue and then a Mexican dish comes out of nowhere and kind of like is in the running to win this thing. There's just some really cool glimpses into some unexpected moments.
And are you ever surprised by who ultimately kind of prevails in this, you know, town hall style competition at the end?
Yeah, I'm super surprised that I didn't win every episode. I was shocked. There were moments where I was like, you know, it's not about the win. It's about like this awesome person that I just met in this great restaurant. And then I'd lose. And I was like, it's about the win. I messed up. I'm so angry right now. It's like, I want to show you because to this day, it burns a hole in me. But I lose one week to a dish that still to this day, I wake up some nights screaming. The whole house is just a lot. You know what I mean? It's affected me.
Well, we cannot wait to watch. And it sounds like such a fun concept for sure. When we come back, Noah talks Carnival Eats and what he's learned after hosting the show for 11 seasons.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
As you kind of alluded to, this is not your first rodeo when it comes to hosting food or reality TV. You've now been hosting Carnival Eats for 11 seasons, which is incredible. What valuable lessons have you learned from that experience that you are now applying to this new show, Best Bite in Town?
Yeah, I think I didn't realize it, but when I was talking with Guy one time, he was like, you know, next to me, you've probably done the most kind of like in situation cooking kind of, you know, experiences, like where I'm standing beside a chef in their kitchen or in their trailer, whatever it may be, making a dish. You know, we've done over 1,000 foods on Carnival Eats now. Wow. So I've been in that environment a lot. So I think going into Best Bite in Town, I was super comfortable in that format. And again, it's, you know, for people that don't know me, shame on you.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah.
This giant oval head has been trying to get your attention for years. But for people that don't know, I'm not a chef. And I've always said I've loved that Food Network has embraced me because I'm not a traditional behind the counter. You know what I mean? I'm the person who sits on the other side. Mm-hmm. I have an equal passion for food. I understand it. I can describe it. I've been fortunate enough to travel and eat all over the world and all of it. But I'm not a traditional chef. So I think I bring a little bit more of maybe a lingo and a kind of description of food and moments that somebody at home kind of relates to and feels like this guy speaks my lingo a little bit, you know?
No, I totally agree with that. I think it's like, you know, you kind of bring that perspective of like, well, I don't know what that is, so I'm going to ask what that is, you know, not be afraid about it, which I think, you know, is really refreshing to see for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. There were moments on Best Bite where, you know, we're picking from the menu and I'm just like, I don't know what this is. And they explained it to me and I'm like, I want to pick this because it sounds fantastic. And B, I'd love to learn what this thing is all about. You know what I mean? Yeah, I'm open and super comfortable to say that I am a sponge just trying to soak it all in.
Speaking of Carnival Eats, I mean, is there anything that you remember over the years that has really stood out as like impressive or, you know, something you can't stop thinking about?
It's hard. It's like there's two or three questions that I 100% get asked the most. Mm-hmm. And one of them is, what's your favorite food? And it's tough because it's that thing where it's like, other than, you know, what's your favorite pizza slice of all time? What's your favorite glass of water you ever drink? It's like, it's just like, it's one of those things. It's like you put something in the deep fryer, it kind of just magically becomes something that your body's like, yeah, this is working. But there are a couple of standouts and I find myself constantly circling back to French onion soup on a stick.
How was that executed?
The execution was like as good as the payoff.
Okay.
It's super cool. Takes a big baking sheet, big baking tray, and basically fills it with all of the onion and cheese and a little bit of the broth, kind of like, you know, level, and then freezes it.
Mm.
Cuts these rectangular, sticks it. And then batters it and fries it. So now you've got this deep fried outside, which is your bread from the soup.
Mm-hmm.
You've got all that onion and cheese in the middle that's hot, melting.
Molten. Burn the roof of your mouth for sure.
If it's done right, yeah, you're just like, I know this is burning, but it tastes so good. I'm going to keep going kind of moment. And then a little au jus, like a dipping cup. So once you dip that thing in and it soaks in that broth, the second you bite into it, you're like, I'm getting onion, I'm getting cheese, I'm getting bread, I'm getting the broth, except this bread's deep fried. And then, you know what I mean? It was amazing. That was awesome. I like Christmas morning.
No, I know. You're so excited, like reliving it all over again. I feel like I'm right there with you. I mean, in your opinion, what sets Carnival food apart from other types of cuisine? Is it that it is fried and on a stick very often, or are there other hallmarks that we're not thinking about?
It's the more I watch Food Network, the more I kind of spend time in restaurants or whatever. It's like the lines of carnival food and normal food are starting to blur.
This is true.
You know what I mean? You're seeing, it's an elevated, it's a panko breadcrumb on this one, but it's a fried item that you battered and what I mean. There's a lot of elevated food on the fairground that's more than just kettle corn and cotton candy and stuff like that. I've stood behind hundreds of people who have real training, who went to culinary school, who just are cut from a different cloth and want to be on the road and want to be on the move and don't want to have a brick and mortar. But I feel like those lines are blurring a little bit, Carnival food can be so much more than what people think it is. I've had some really beautiful elevated dishes on the show, actually.
I mean, that said, is there anything that you have not tried fried that you think would work?
I mean, my list is they're crossing things off. I mean, last season we ate a Twinkie with caviar on it.
Oh, you know what wow. I mean?
We're out there now. We're out there. Deep fried entire pizza slices. I mean, you name it. It's like every combination, every kind of creation. My body is either dead inside or it's my destiny. You know what I mean? Everybody's like, what happens after you're filming? You know what I mean? And I'm just like, I'm fine. I'm like, nothing happens.
Really? No heartburn, no digestive issues to speak of so far?
None of it. I remember shooting the pilot and I called my wife from the hotel. And I was like, this is going to be a problem. You know what I mean? But since then, I don't know. It doesn't affect me. I don't know if that's a good thing.
Your stomach of steel. You've just had so much of it that your stomach's like, all right, fine.
That's it. There's just a beautiful line, a coated deep fried shell in there.
Is there, I mean, I'm sure you've gotten this question a lot too. What's the worst deep fried thing that you've ever tried?
The only thing that's ever exited my face after I put it in.
It's a great way to put it.
The only thing that ever left was blue cheese stuffed king-sized olives.
Okay.
Olives are a little bit of my kryptonite. Mm. I don't know why. If I'm getting a sub made at the local little whatever and a little bit of olive gets into the shredded lettuce bucket, and it makes it onto the sandwich, it's like the needle in the haystack. It's like, I know it's there. The second that thing hits my mouth, I knew it was going to be a problem. Plus, I'm not the biggest fan of blue cheese. Mm. So I was like, this combination is going to be, it's going to be whatever. The vendor was the sweetest guy. And I took a bite and I got, as my teeth went through it the second time, it was just like, and it came back out under my hand. And I immediately, I'm a good person. I was like, I feel so bad for our vendor. You know what I mean? They're excited. They've seen the show. I'm there and here I am, whatever. And I turned to him and I was like, Rick, it's not your food, brother. It's my, he's like, no, I hate olives. If they sell, I sell them. I was like, all right, amazing. You get it. That's it. That was the one time.
All right. I mean, I am the same way with bell peppers. So I understand your pain, but I don't think I wouldn't have been able to even take the bite. So good on you for giving it a try.
You know what's weird about listening to other people's revealing their food when you don't have a problem with it? You're like,
what?
That's what a weird one. You know what I mean? I'm like, bell peppers. They're fine. What's your problem with those? Well, you're probably thinking the same with olives.
Yeah, I love olives and I like blue cheese as well. So yeah, but no, bell peppers, that's my one kryptonite for sure. So no, good on you for at least giving it a whirl. I mean, I want to switch gears a little bit. And speaking of people that, trying things for the first time, your daughter, Wolfie, is definitely the star of your Instagram feed. Has she developed any favorite foods yet or aversions? Her dad and olives.
Yeah, she's taken over the page. But you know what? The truth is she's bringing more happiness than I ever have on my account. I get so many. There's so many times where I'm just she's approaching an age where I think it's time to and I let her live her journey and all those kinds of things. But it's so hard because, Jamie, it's I get such beautiful messages from people who are everything you can think of. You know, people who have grown up and their kids are grown up and they're kind of getting to relive the process. Mm-hmm. People who never got to have kids and are kind of like watching whatever. It's for the people that have been on my account. I mean, they've really watched this kiddo grow. And like, it's approaching that point where it's like ready to kind of like, you know, let her have her own moment in time. But as of right now, she makes a lot of people happy and she's a little eater. And it all started with ribs. Started with her eating full blown, like off the bone, like beef ribs, like giant.
Oh, a beef whatever. Rib. Okay.
I mean, you name it, any kind of rib. And this little, she was one and change and was cleaning bones, like just knocking them out typewriter style. It was unbelievable. She's like every kid now. It's like, she goes through a thing where it's like every day she eats X and then morning 17, you make X and she's like, no,
you know, it's like, I don't like that anymore.
You don't like X anymore. So we're riding the ride, but it's my first time, our first kid. And I don't know, it's hard and magical and
all of the above.
All of it. Yeah.
Are there any dishes or recipes passed down through your family that you can't wait to share with her?
There are. Can we like... This is one of those moments where I'm going to share something that I feel, and I'm hoping you agree with me.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like when you're like, doesn't everybody? And then you share it and everyone's like, no, we don't think Crickets. That or whatever. Yeah. I think that there's a lot of people who have recipes or things like from their parents or whatever it is that they're like growing up. I was like, my dad makes the best French toast. Mm-hmm. It's like this signature thing, less caps, French toast. It's just whatever. And then I get older and Wolfie enters my life. And I say to my dad, he's in his early 80s, those conversations of like, you know, show me how to like how you do it. Or like, can you write it down or whatever it is. And then you stand there and you're like, it's just French toast. Not in a bad way, but just like you realize that like it's special because it's yours. It's the connection
your
to
experience. Yeah,
that's it. And there's, I think that's for people who struggle to understand when people talk about love and food and that connection. I think that is a great way to describe it, where something that is, it's, you know, a little vanilla extract, a little cinnamon, a little nutmeg, like whip the eggs, a little pop of this, use French toast or a brioche, whatever it is. It's like, boom, boom, boom. It's like there's probably 8,000 diners doing it the same way. But my dad didn't hand it to me. You know what I mean? And I didn't smell it in the house and have the anticipation in that environment and all the things that go into it. So in hindsight, as I'm an adult now, I've realized that the things that I'm going to pass down from my dad or whatever are pretty standard. But I think I'll just create the rest of it for her. And that will round out that dish and that kind of moment. You know, did I that get too cheesy? Was that weird?
No,
was that,
I love that. I mean, I'm smiling the whole time listening to it because I'm thinking about, you know, my dad, and he had these, like, we call them his famous jalapeno poppers, but like, they're not anything different than any other jalapeno popper that you probably ever made at home. You know, it's like maybe three or four ingredients, you know. And now that he's passed, like, I still get requests. I get so excited to make them, even though, yeah, like, they're probably just the same as anybody others, any other family out there that makes them. But for me, it was like, oh no, this is how he makes them. And this is what he brought, you know, to family cookouts and barbecues and that kind of thing. So it's special to me. And that memory, I think, like you said, that experience and that connection to the food is just as important as like the food and the recipe itself. So
Jamie, maybe we don't eat with our eyes first. We eat with our hearts.
With our hearts. Oh.
You know what I mean? Can we get the whole legal team on that and trademark that? That's good. I want t-shirts. I want everything.
I want a t-shirt for sure. You got to.
Oh, so we'll send you one. I own that now. I own that line. Boom. Look how fast my fake team is on it.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. My fake team's on it as well. Speaking of family, you know, you've said before that you and your wife, Carrie, are quite the homebodies, which I can also relate to. How does your love for cozy nights influence your approach to cooking and meal prep at home?
Yeah. Well, real talk. I mean, I've always been pretty blunt and honest. These days, the cooking is not as plentiful as maybe it was when I
maybe because you don't have as much time these days, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, look, we live in a world now where it's like there's so many unbelievable options to be able to get good, awesome, prepared, like healthy food in front of her on those tough days and whatever. So I know that she's eating well and she's got a great diet, but you know what I mean? It's I'm not standing in front of like a giant pot, like stirring whatever in the middle of the night. I'm watching reality TV and just being like, I got an hour before I pass out from exhaustion. You know what I mean? I got to get to this rose ceremony. It's these are the new pressures. I can't. Carrie and I are definitely Carrie and I have always my wife, Carrie. Now, we've always lived a life of extremes. It's either like full blown sweatpant mode, like let's marathon this, you know, new dating series, or we're on a plane somewhere. I mean, obviously with Wolfie now things are a bit different, but when I had a break from filming Carnival Eats, if it was 12 days, we would go somewhere for 11. Mm. If I was off for 7 days, we'd go somewhere for six. I mean, we hiked to temples in Bhutan. We floated through rivers in New Zealand. I climbed the pyramids in Egypt. I mean, we covered ground. We did a lot of unbelievable wild things, but no middle ground. Like from that, just like literally walking through the front door, like ripping everything off to get into sweatpants. It's like there's no in between.
All right. Well, so what's your ideal cozy in your sweatpants night at home with Carrie?
Good little snuggle sesh. I'm a touchy person. I'm not going to whatever. I like all, you know, a foot rub, whatever it is. And then probably pizza. Just like good old fashioned comfort, feel good. Like I had a tough day. I deserve this
pizza. Of course. Your little treat.
Yeah. Unfortunately, then you look at your past orders and you're like, I've had a little treat 7 out of 15 nights.
That's a good ratio, I feel like.
Yeah. It's the simple things now. It's really just like plopping down in front of a good show and chatting, whatever. Carrie and I have a great communication. We, you know, we talk endlessly, share everything. So, you know, she's creeping right now. She's watching this secretly.
Are you two still hosting your annual National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation theme parties?
Whoa, Jamie, doing the deep dive.
Yeah.
Shout out to your fake team that did all the research.
The real team, yeah.
Wow. We've moved on to a new tradition.
Okay.
For people that don't know, every Christmas we would dress up as a character from National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Mm-hmm. The fun part was you couldn't do the same character twice, and there was a bunch of us. So by like year 5 or 6, you know what I mean?
We were deep.
It was like, but if you're a hardcore fan, you'd open the door and just be like, you're the two guys driving the truck behind them at the beginning that runs them off the road. It was like a blast. And we had a ton of fun. But then it got to the point where it was like, we're literally running out of characters. So we switched and we've got a new tradition now where we celebrate each Christmas in a different decade. Mm. So we started in the 50s. We've done 50s, 60s, 70s, and this year is 80s.
Fun.
So yeah, everybody dresses up. We try to bring a food or something that's like kind of, you know, connected to that time period, a little like decor piece or two. We're not maniacs. I mean, it's not like, you know, whatever. It's just for a couple hours. We're like sitting around for 48 hours over Christmas with like permed out crazy shoulder pad.
I mean, that would be impressive and, you know, admirable for sure, but not necessary.
It's fun. It adds a fun little element.
So wait, what's going to be like the 80s food item? Or have you gotten that far yet?
If I can find it, I don't know if you remember, but there was a milkshake that you microwaved.
Ooh,
I think they were called micro shakes or something like that. Yeah. I don't know.
And they still make these?
It was no. I mean, no. The 90s came and science stepped in and was just like, this is disgusting. We can't serve this anymore.
Illegal.
You know, it was literally like a diner thing. It was like burger, fries, and a shake. And you put it all in the microwave. And when I'm not joking, when that milkshake came out, it was freezing cold.
What?
You know what I mean? Google it or whatever. I don't know what, magical. You know what I mean. That's, I'm telling you, it's out there. It's a real thing.
Wizardry. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. Well, if you can recreate that, that'll be definitely something to look forward to. One more deep dive question. Do you still have the bedside toaster?
Wow. I mean, a guy gets a bedside toaster and can't even keep it a secret to himself. there was a period of time where Carrie and I would watch all our shows, like, you know, end of the day, whatever, in bed. Mm. So we'd like get comfy and whatever. And my snack, my go-to snack when I'm watching shows is toasting an English muffin, toasting a bagel, putting some butter, maybe a little PB, maybe PB&J, maybe cream cheese and jam. Okay. And if you haven't tried that, try it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe jam and melted processed cheese slice over top of it. Have you ever had that?
I have not had that.
Well,
no.
Jamie, you're going to try it. I'm telling you.
Okay, Noah, I have so many questions about this because do you also have like a bedside mini refrigerator to keep like the cream cheese or other condiments cold, or like how is this working?
I feel like you're kind of passively aggressively teasing me.
I mean,
the bedside toaster is odd until you listen to think. Okay, just imagine
this. Okay.
My go-to snack when I'm watching a show, whatever, is I want to toast up some delicious bready little delights and slather them with a nice hot little melted margarine or butter. I got to come downstairs. I got to put on a robe or whatever. I got to come downstairs. I got to stand in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. Now I'm putting that toast and I'm by here by myself. I'm standing in the dark next to the thing. I'm waiting 3.5 minutes for it to pop up. I got to get the thing. I'm going to toast or whatever. Then I'm going to bring it upstairs and whatever. And there's a 98% chance that at some point in the night, I'm going to want to pop down for another one. So it's like, you know what I mean? Carrie's starting to fall asleep. I'm still up. I need another bagel. I'm coming downstairs. This is crazy. For my birthday, Carrie sets up this whole little thing on the bedside table with a toaster, a little butter dish, this like fresh baked roll thing and whatever. And now I'm lying in bed and I can now reach over, pop in a couple of slices. Not only is that hot and fresh and I didn't have to move, the room smells like a bakery. There's hot, fresh, delicious scents in the air. Come on. You know what I mean?
No, I mean, it sounds lovely. I mean, it sounds, you know, reminiscent of like when you order room service at the hotel and you're sitting in the bed and it's so lovely. But I do feel like that's like a novel, like special thing. So does this detract from the novelty at all? The fact that you have it at the ready now? Like,
I mean, I'm not staying in a lot of hotels with room service. You know what I mean? Like when we're filming Carnival Eats and I'm 3 hours outside of an airport in the middle of whatever.
There's no room service. You're lucky if you get some chips from the front desk.
Yeah, it's like, do we go into Denny's or Jack in the Box? The bedside toaster, unfortunately, has moved on. We've got a kiddo now.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Oh, okay. Safety first.
Safety first. Safety first. That's how much I love Wolfie. You know what
okay.
I mean?
Yeah. I mean, all right. Well, maybe someday, you know, when she's older, the bedside toaster can make a return.
I don't even know why I'm going to tell you this, but the truth is, Jamie, yes, we almost did have a little mini. That's a lie. We did have a mini fridge, but we never put anything in it. In all fairness.
I feel like a mini fridge would be a great, like, dual bedside table situation. Like, you know.
Carrie's a tea drinker. So then I was like, why don't we set up a little tea station for you, like a hotel? And then it was like, well, I'm going to need milk. So the bottom shelf of our closet, we took out all the like clothes and sweaters and put in a little mini fridge.
But you didn't use it?
But we never used it. Yeah.
And is it still there?
No, it's in the basement.
It's in there now.
Just like every other family, it's got moved to the basement and it's been there for 7 years.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, I look forward to the day where your entire bedroom setup makes a return because it does sound pretty epic.
The day that kiddo goes off to college, it's like, hi, sweetheart, click, get the toaster. You know what I mean?
Oh, man. Well, this has been so much fun. I'm chatting and catching up. We're going to finish off with a little rapid fire. And then we have one final question for you. All right. Rapid fire questions. Favorite carnival ride?
Not the spinning ones anymore. You know what I mean?
No.
Papa's getting older. And the magic of those rides is that'll ruin my day. If I go on a spinny ride right out of the gate, day ruined.
All right. So anything but a spinny ride.
Yeah, like a slow stationary ride. Remember the drive your own old timey car at Disney?
Yeah.
That's my speed.
Okay. All right. Chef, you would like to add to the Bite Club?
Oh, wow. I mean, watch an episode of Tournament of Champions right now and literally close your eyes and point at the board. It's such, I feel like there are more unbelievable talents on the network right now than ever before. It's like a laundry list that I would be like spoiled rotten to have. There's a few personalities that I've gotten a chance. It's like Scott Conant, I would love to see in that environment. Eric Agyapong, who's just like having such a awesome ride, and yes. Him and I clicked a little bit. I mean, there's so many people. Antonio LaFossa, who like held my hand so much in those initial episodes of Guy's Grocery Games, where I was coming in as the new guy. Yeah, I mean, honestly, it would be anybody and everybody, spoiled or rotten.
I love it. Favorite food destination that you've visited while filming any of your shows?
I will say, I had my first Connecticut pizza.
Where did you go?
I went to Sally's. It's legit. It's really that. If you like that style, mm-hmm. I went in with as much hype as it could. And I won't say how many slices or squares I ate, but you know what I mean? Double digits.
As you should. Sweet or savory?
I mean, Carnival Eats has taught me that you can have both. But I think I often think of myself as a savory guy until I really step back and I'm like, I'm eating a half to a full bag of dark chocolate covered almonds every night. That might mean, you know, literally.
You might be a sweet.
It's a problem. I got to figure it out.
Your go-to comfort meal.
Bread, toast, bread, like just bagels.
Bedside toast.
Yeah. A little bedside toast. Oh man. Those were the days, you know.
Favorite Canadian delicacy.
Whoa. Heyo. I'll say it for the thousandth time. Poutine. If it had a different name, it would be so big in the States. I think it's got poo in the name and people just get distracted and weirded out. It's French fries with cheese curds, squeaky, unbelievably, like think Wisconsin cheese, and then soaked in hot gravy. So that cheese melts. I mean, it is so good. You can get every version of it in the world. Poutine for the win.
Yes, it is. It is a delight. And I feel like not done well in the States when it is tried.
Somebody needs to open one in Vegas. You know what I mean? It's the official
stand. Yeah. Like with all the different kinds and you could just take it on the go.
You have a couple too many adult bevies. That's the delight for you.
That's going to bring you back for sure. Or maybe in the morning, too. So
there's no wrong time. There's breakfast poutine.
All right. Our final question is the question we ask everybody at the end of our interviews here on Food Network Obsessed. It is not rapid fire, so you can take as long as you want on this one. And the question is, what would be on the menu for your perfect food day? So we want you to take us through breakfast, lunch, dinner, dessert. There are no rules. So you can travel, time travel, have anybody cook these meals for you. It's your day. We want to hear where you're going.
I mean, I can stand, I can pretend to be like, ooh, whatever. I could literally like knock this thing out in 2 seconds. You know what I mean? I could tell you instantly.
Let's brunch,
I'm not waking up for breakfast. This is dream day. Mm-hmm. I wake up at like 5 to 6 every morning. Not a chance. I'm sleeping till double digits.
Perfect.
I'm getting up. I'm having eggs Benny. I'm replacing the classic ham with avocado. And man, that hollandaise, that runny yolk, all of it on a little brioche instead of an English muffin. I don't know how English muffin became the official base of a Benny, but it doesn't work. It's like, you know what I mean? You're cutting it. The thing is sliding around the table.
Yeah, anyway, I agree with you.
We're moving on to lunch. Also, okay. I'm washing that thing down with a iced latte, probably two. I'm a big guy. Lunch, I'm going turkey sub. Just turkey, cheese.
No olives.
Swiss provolone, lettuce, tomato, sub sauce, mayo, done. 12
Wait,
inches.
What's sub sauce? Is that like
oil
burger sauce?
Like oil vinegar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And a couple of bags of little like Halloween style chips. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I don't know. Ritos, Ruffles. I don't care. Maybe a sparkling water with that one.
Okay.
It's a healthier meal.
Yeah.
Dinner, pizza. And I'm probably going Detroit style pizza. Mm. I'm still all over it.
Detroit style.
Love it. With those little cup and char Ronies, and they get all burnt around the edge and the pool of grease.
Cheese on the side.
Just love it. I want it. I'll probably do a fancy dipping sauce. And if they don't have one, I'll go ranch. And then in a dream world, there's a chocolate milkshake on the table. And then because I've already filled my belly with all those delicious ice creams and dairy, I'm going to double down and finish with a hot fudge brownie sundae. Whipped cream, crushed walnuts, the end. You know what I mean?
All right.
Sweatpants from when I woke up. So I feel fine the whole day.
Obviously, I feel like, you know, you are a man that knows what he wants. And that is a perfect Noah food day, it sounds like.
That's it. So I'm a simple man.
I love it. I love it. Well, it has been a blast chatting with you. And we are so excited about the new show, Best Bite in Town. Cannot wait to watch. Best of luck with all of your success.
Thank you so much. And let's do this again. Let's not wait 3 years.
Okay, deal.
Yeah, deal.
And you can catch Best Bite in Town premiering April 12th at 9 p.m. Eastern on Food Network. Make sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a thing. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review. We love it when you do that. That's all for now. We'll catch you foodies next Friday.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.